Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, we're back with episode 23 of Digital Divination. And, you know, I was just watching this game on TV. I don't know if you know that there's this big sporting event that happened today.
Oh, yeah, some superb owl, I understand.
Yes, 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 a very superb owl game. And it was pretty exciting. Did you watch it at all?
I did not, no.
Yeah, I'm kind of a football fan. You know, my team, pro team is Seattle, and so when they were out, I wasn't terribly excited about anything. But this particular game I was really interested in because one of the players in it is Tom Brady.
Right.
Have you heard of him?
I have heard of him. Right. Even as somebody who does not follow sports ball very much, I have heard of Tom Brady.
Yeah, and so, you know, Tom Brady had been with the Patriots for a long time. He'd been to 9 previous Super Bowls and won 6 of them. And a lot of people don't like Tom Brady, but little known fact, I was actually at University of Michigan going to school for my grad degree, and Tom Brady was a quarterback there.
Ooh.
So I've always been a Tom Brady fan. And, you know, what's really interesting about this year is, you know, there's always been this talk that was it Tom Brady or was it Bill Belichick, his coach at New England, that was really contributing to their wild success for this run of some 20 years, right?
Right.
And, you know, and so this was like the big question now. So here's Tom. He's a kind of a seasoned player, really familiar with a certain system in New England. Now he's going to go to a completely different team, a completely different system. And what's it going to take for him to excel? You know, and so he was able to go there and he had to kind of learn new teammates, learn new personalities, kind of learn a new coach who's running things a certain way. And there were some rough spots in there. They actually, you know, at week 12, they had a bye after week 12, and they were 7-5. And a lot of people were writing them off. They had like a three or four game losing streak. But they were able to kind of take a breather. And, you know, Tom really kind of got into the system, got other people to buy in, and they were pretty successful. So it was really exciting for them to win, for me to see them win. You know, Tampa Bay's second Super Bowl in 19 years now. Okay. And then Tom to win his third in the last 4 years, but with a different team.
Wow.
So, yeah. So I thought that was really, really cool. And it reminded me of something that you had mentioned that we might talk about this week.
Oh, yes. The things that you have to think of when you're changing teams, so to speak, or joining a new team, rather. Yeah. That is to say, if you've got a line on a Starfinder game that already is ongoing and you're going to be joining as a new player, what do you ought to think about?
Yeah, and, you know, so I was seeing some parallels here, you know. It can be a little rough, you know, some personality differences and not knowing precisely, you know, you had a certain role before and who's going to take on that role, what you should do. And so, you know, that's what I was thinking. That, you know, it's kind of a neat parallel there.
Yeah, I think the coach, I think that's interesting that you brought up there because I think that is a really big part of the game. The GM who's sort of the one who's sort of calling all the plays, absolutely, and, you know, might be the coach of the whole game, so to speak, keeping everything running and moving. Little adversarial, I suppose, is
as they can be. Coaches are kind of like that. Yeah.
I guess that's true. That's true. And so, learning how a new coach runs the team is very much. I would say it's probably the first order of business for anybody who's going to be joining a new Starfinder game. What is the GM like? What are they running? Obviously. What kind of style do they have? What sort of expectations do they have at the table? Where do they run the game? How are you going to play? Is it going to be a roll 20 and Zoom thing? Is it going to be at somebody's house? What time is it going to be? That kind of stuff. That's all stuff the coach sort of sets in motion, and you're expected as being part of the team to follow.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, if you've played for a while, you know, you kind of get a sense that they're different type of coaches, and it's the same with sports, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you get some that are really controlling, and some would argue that, you know, Tom Brady's old coach is really controlling, and then some of them are kind of more laissez-faire. You kind of, hey, let's just take things wherever the players want to go. And I think getting a sense for that, I think it also a big part is kind of figuring out how the other players interact. That's one thing that I always found tough. You know, when I was a kid, my family moved around a lot. I think we moved 11 times growing up, something like that. So we moved a lot of different places, and I always dreaded going to new schools and meeting new people and having to figure that stuff out. And that's something you got to do as a player too.
Yeah, I think that's right. I'm there with you. I think I remembered I was being a little bit considering 14. When I turned 14, that was a little bit of a milestone, because for the first time in my life, the number of years old I was greater than the number of times I'd moved in my life.
Wow.
So yeah, we'd moved 13 times by the time I was 12. And then, you know, we're sort of stayed put, and I was, you know, got to be a little older, and, realized, oh, this is the time when I'm finally, you know, more years old than I am number of times I've moved.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That is a lot of moving. So between the two of us, we've done this.
That's right. We've switched teams a lot. The, you know, but yeah, coming into a new school, you got to figure out, you know, who are the, you know, how the schools run, right? How the other players, that is the other students, sort of interact with each other, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, because something that may have been an okay way to interact with the other kids and made you mm-hmm. good friends at one school is like doing that kind of thing will make you a pariah at the next school.
So. Well, and I think one of the things that I'm always nervous about is, you know, there's history there already. You know, if you join a new game, those players have a lot of history. Their characters have a lot of history. There's inside jokes and things that you just weren't a part of. And it's really kind of hard to make that. How do you transition? How do you figure out how to fit in like that?
Well, there's a lot of new jokes that are made every time, right? Every time around the table, everybody's making new references that everybody else is going to pick up. I think, you know, that you can't expect all the old players to have forgotten everything that happened before you came on, but knowing that that's there and people are going to reference that, you know, play along and reference things that you do know about, right? You know, they're referencing when, you know, some prior player stood up against a monster and just about got killed because they did something brave / foolish. You know, oh yeah, it's like when we went up against that mountain eel just two sessions ago, and that was like brave and foolish, right? I mean, mm-hmm. there's a lot. You're making your own history, and you shouldn't be afraid to point that out or build upon that, I think. I feel like everybody has a past, but part of the nature of gaming is that we are creating new experiences every time we get together. That's part of the fun, is that we're always creating new experiences.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think other players, you know, if you're a new player joining an existing game, and in this case, talking about Starfinder, you know, I think other players realize that, you know, you have some experiences and that, you know, they have some things that they've done. I don't think anybody generally rubs that in your face kind of thing. But what I'm wondering is, are there other things that you can do coming in as a new player to prepare for that? You know, other than, you know, getting a sense for the GM, but then what would you want to see, like if you're an existing player, what would you want to see that new player do to make you feel more confident, I guess, as them as being part of the table?
Well, I think one of the things that I would want to see a new player, I mean, apart from sort of a general openness, friendliness, be willing to be part of the team, that it would apply in any role-playing game. I think one of the things that distinguishes Starfinder is that it hasn't been around for very long, and yet it's had some pretty sweeping additions to the game sort of in every now and again throughout. There's already been like a lot of cycles where they've added a lot to the game. I feel like Pact Worlds added a lot of sort of options to the game. The Armory added a whole lot of options to the game. Character Operations Manual, probably the most addition of options. And as these things kind of get folded in, they let everybody see the game new. I'd almost say if somebody else was joining a game, if they were playing sort of whatever the new hotness is, right? Oh, here's a book that came out that's got either a whole new class or here's a new take on an old class. That would be exciting for me to see for a couple reasons. One, it would give me some confidence that here's somebody who's sort of willing to embrace kind of the fact that this game is changing. And it would let me, on second, it would let me see how the game is changing, even though I've got sort of my character I've been playing for a long time. How about you? What do you think somebody could do to, what do you think you would like to see a new person coming in do or be?
Well, let me tell you about something I just actually encountered this weekend. I was GMing for our local lodge here, Emerald City Lodge, a game. And I had a player that had brought a character in, and it was a large size character, and I didn't recognize it. And he said, it's an android. I think, oh, this is kind of weird. So it's an android with a alternate racial feature of being a different form than humanoid. And I know, you know, I remember in Character Operations, there's a whole bunch of these alternate racial features that are society legal. I don't have them all memorized. And I told him, hey, this is the first time I've seen this in game. Could you explain it? You know, tell me what the site is and kind of explain a little bit to me. And he told me, oh, yeah. So I'm an android. I'm large size and I'm of the Han subtype. And if you look in the Character Operations Manual, it says if you're the Han subtype, you get their reach and you, I think you get their breath weapon or some breath attack. And that's it. You know, everything else is as per the android specification. Oh, well, that's kind of cool.
So you're not big?
I mean, you are big.
Oh, yeah, you can be large as well. Okay.
And you got the size, reach, and then something.
Oh, size and reach. I thought you said reach and breath. And okay.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing that set me off is the size, because it's like, nobody, there's no large androids. And, you know, not that I was checking up on them, but as a GM, when I see something unusual, you know, I ask the players and kind of see where it comes from. And I'm also in the background looking things up just to make sure. Because I don't – now, this particular player I had played with before – and I kind of figured they knew what they're doing, that they wouldn't be trying, you know, they weren't brand new and say, hey, I'm just pulling something that's at society legal. But it was just he and I on the table were there early. So we're looking at it. And so I guess, you know, reason why I bring this up is if I see somebody that has a new player, a new character that's coming in and it's got something really unusual, like you're talking about, and I've never seen before, I would like for them to be fairly open to kind of explaining it and not in a condescending way, like, oh, you don't know about that, or, oh, I'm so much cooler than your android or whatever, because, you know, this was really cool. You know, I could have my same android and he could have reach. That's really cool. But I guess it's kind of the approach, you know, if you're going to bring in something new and interesting, which I like, and I see this happen a lot in society play where people bring in new things that are society legal that nobody's seen before or I haven't seen. And I've been in a lot of games. So if I, you know, if I hadn't seen it yet, then I know it's not terribly commonplace, but I like for them to kind of explain to me in a nice way, you know, what it is, where it comes from, so that I get a sense for how it's going to play. And as a player, you know, that could be beneficial. Oh, this thing has reach. Oh, it's using a reach weapon, which means it's going to threaten a lot of area. And in his particular case, you know, we're doing on roll 20, he put an aura on his thing so that I could see his reach range all the time. So I knew what he threatened, you know?
Oh, that's good. That's good preparation on this new player's part. I think that sort of invitation is actually invitation to talk about some interesting build you've done is something that I think people genuinely like, right? When you're functionally, what you're saying is, hey, tell me about your character. You did something cool. Tell me what's cool. And they're like, oh, well, I did do a cool thing. Here's the cool thing. And whether it's somebody that wants to talk about specific mechanics of a build, like being a large size android, or they want, you know, some interesting or cool point about their character's backstory that they've made up. You know, I think that people are excited to talk about the characters that they have. Back in it's an earlier Living Games, it was always kind of easy to tell the people that were intentionally taking liberties with the rules to try to do something with their character build that they shouldn't do, because when you ask them, they wouldn't get excited about telling you about their character. They get all defensive. They'd be like, "Oh, well, you don't know all the chronicle sheets I have and all of the things I've unlocked from that." Mm-hmm. Like, whoa, just asking. Same way, right? I haven't seen that before. I'm excited to see what the system can do, because I think that there are ways that the Starfinder system in particular is very flexible that I think we have not yet even seen. And so being able to have sort of different takes on that is super interesting. It's part of the reason that I think you can play, dozens or hundreds of different sessions, thousands of different sessions of this game and still have a lot of it still feeling very fresh.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, as they introduce new things, there's new spells, there's new weapons, new armors, new classes. Now we have new racial traits that are coming out with the Alien Archive 4 that you can apply to other races. And so, it's really broadening what you can do as a player. And this is, one of the things, I talk to people all the time. As a GM, I've GM'd a lot and I've played a lot, but I can't remember everything. Right. So, I'm happy to go ahead and say, oh, well, that's kind of neat. Why don't you explain that to me so I know how it works? And I'm not trying to, aha, you're cheating, and I'm not going to allow that. I'm too knowledgeable about my own ignorance to know that I will probably make a mistake and embarrass myself if I do that.
Oh, that's funny. Funny. I'm actually, speaking of, I'm really excited about Alien Archive 4 and that really hitting. I have, I don't know if I mentioned what I wrote in Alien Archive 4. No, I actually, when they were doing the internal solicitation, right, does anybody want to write for Alien Archive 4? Here's kind of the outline of the sort of creatures we're doing. We actually had a brainstorm meeting, as we do with, bestiaries and things like that. We're like, all right, what get all the creative minds together. All right, what cool things could we do? A lot of fun ideas being thrown around. When it got to actual assignment, I told the developers, I said, I only want to take one monster. I'm happy taking just one monster. I want whichever one nobody else wants, right? You get to the end of the list and you give everybody the cool, awesome monsters they want to write. I want whatever nobody wants. I want the leftover one, right? Mm-hmm. And so I ended up writing the Star Metal Eater Oozes.
What? Nobody wanted that?
I was frankly really surprised, because that was one that I was kind of thinking, there's some cool stuff you could do here.
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
it requires some work, because you've got to dig into what the different star metals are in the game, what they do, not only mechanically, but thematically. So I think people who wanted to maybe forge new ground in what they wanted to write were like, oh, well, let me pick something that's just only conceptual. I get to make a lot of stuff up, rather than, I don't want to sign up for the one that's going to require I do a lot of research.
Oh,
but I like that. So
aren't all the star metal, the new star metals listed in the Starship Operations Manual?
They are. They're in the armory. They're all listed in the armory.
Okay.
And there have been some creatures that are affiliated with some of the star metals kind of thus far.
I guess the reason why I brought it up, and so in Starship Operations Manual, if you make certain weapons and things out of different metals, it has different effects. So there's actually quite a bit that talks about that there. Mm-hmm. And I remember the armory covers it in terms of like the projectiles and stuff as well. So I know. It didn't seem like there'd be that much research, but maybe there is.
But then tying it all mechanically, and there's some difficulty in making sure, all right, well, you have to basically do 7 different templates for all the different star metals, and they have to be mechanically balanced, which is hard.
So one creature, you had to make 7 templates for one creature?
Right. Well, I made one, and I want to say it was the Horacalcum.
Right, moves, right.
And then all of the rest of them were, all right, well, if it wasn't Horacalcum, it'd be this instead, and get rid of its, time ability and add this other ability instead, and get rid of this resistance or add this immunity or resistance or whatever. And then making all of those balanced, I feel like that was kind of a lot of work as well, because obviously if you've got a template where as soon as you slap it on, it becomes significantly more powered than any other similar template, then it's just not reasonable. Mm-hmm. But I ended up playing around with it a little bit, and I think I hit a good balance, and then it was up to developers to make, to kind of fine tune that. And I feel like it came out really good. So
yeah. How much change? So you're somebody who's a very experienced writer for Pathfinder and Starfinder. How much change do you see in your final product from what you turn in?
Well, none.
Do you see a lot?
I hardly ever look at the final product. No, when I do, and I'll go through looking for specific things, right? If I've got what I think is a fairly clever encounter in an adventure, or something that's kind of funny that I've put in that I think the players will really enjoy, I look for specific things. I don't necessarily do like a page by page. I do that from time to time. I actually did that for the Attack of the Swarm adventure that I did. Mm-hmm. I kind of did a page for page through my turnover, because every now and again, I like to do a very comprehensive comparison to see where I can improve. Mm-hmm. That's a sort of personal improvement goal that I do.
Nice.
And that's actually a lot of fun. I haven't done that with the Alien Archive 4 for the Star Metal Eater there, but I did end up using the final version as it appeared in Alien Archive 4 when I included a Star Metal Eater monster in a different product.
Yes. No spoilers.
But I do have a tendency when I'm sort of throwing in monsters or encounters, even in very short things, to pull from what I've written, because that's what I know. And I will not go to what I wrote. I will go to what the final version was. And in some cases, that's really showed me, oh, I really thought this was going to be X, but it ended up being Y. And that's really cool. That's better. I was telling somebody the other day that my wife, who's done a lot of freelancing for Paizo, she's maybe not yet wholly to the point where things can be very different. Things can be even a little different from what you turned over, and you just don't get your feelings hurt, right? She's still a little bit, oh man, that was cool, and they cut it. Oh, I'm like, well, you know, you just roll with it, right? And there are so many different reasons that things have to change that there's no way an author can account for. Mm-hmm. Either it's too similar to something else that's either in the same book that you didn't know about, or in the book before, the book after, which you might have no knowledge that it even exists. Mm-hmm. You might have it might be some sort of overlap like that. It might be something you might have come up with, the idea that the developers are reserving for some later product but isn't even out yet. I think I accidentally stumbled into one of those in some early design for the armory, but, in case that does come out, I'm going to keep it under the hat. But anyway, so there's tons of different reasons, and it might be as simple as the illustration on the page has somebody pointing their gun out instead of holding their gun close to their body. And that means literally fewer words fit on the page, and something has to be cut to make it work around the image. So, I mean, there are a lot of things that change that is absolutely not anything the freelancer could know about. And you just kind of, you know, shrug and go on. But I think the things that are most interesting are things that I submitted, and then they did change, not in a way to obviously cut words or to preserve an idea, but to make the presentation to the reader better. Mm-hmm. Those are the things I'm like, ah, that's what I want to learn. Mm-hmm. How to do that better.
Well, and you know, it's funny you bring that up. I was, I had done 6 ships for the Starship Operations Manual, and I'm going through them, you know, page by page, because this is like the first thing had done for Paizo. And most of them were really similar. I saw some changes. I thought, oh, that makes sense. And then a couple of them were a lot different. And then I'm looking at, you know, it kept my front end. Then the back end was a lot different. And I can see it was actually playing off something else that I didn't have knowledge of.
Yep.
And it was like way better the way it all tied together. I'm thinking, oh, this makes so much more sense than what I was, because I was given 2 ships that somebody else had started and then asked to kind of finish it. They had a picture and they had like the name. And then I had to kind of build everything out from that.
Uh-huh.
And apparently there was more to the story than I was told, and that was incorporated later in. So I really just kind of fleshed out the statistical part, and then the backstory was changed quite a bit.
See, and that's actually some of the developer's job that that I deal with, we deal with all the time. And sometimes it's not that they were trying to keep anything from you. They might have just literally not known how it was going to land and thought to themselves, ah, I'll fix that in development. And we tell ourselves that a lot. Ah, I'll fix that in development. It's like the movie, you know, oh, we'll fix it in post.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I say that about podcasts too. And, you know, sometimes it's easier, you know, like when we're doing our actual play, it's a lot easier to get it right the first time. I'm just saying, compared to fixing it in post. I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, so we were talking about new players coming into Starfinder. I think we were talking about existing Starfinder players coming in. What about if you're joining a Starfinder game for the first time and you're new to Starfinder? How does that change the dynamic for you?
Ooh, I think the most important thing that you can do is just to make clear to everybody that you're new to this. You're open to hearing to what they have to say. Obviously, you want everybody to be respectful. But if you're coming in at a real sort of knowledge gap to everybody else at the table, just say so, right? Be honest about it. You're interested in what your character can do and have fun with. One thing that you want to keep in mind if you're gonna, if you're that new player, is you want to know what your character can do and only in broad strokes what every other character can do, right? You don't need to necessarily know the way, if you're new to Starfinder, you're not playing an operative, you don't need to know how trick attack works, but you can know, oh, hey, when that player who plays the operative is making a trick attack, they do a whole crap load of damage. Okay, that's good for me to know. That is the damage dealer character. As soon as they say the words trick attack, it means I'm bringing the pain. And so you don't need to devote a whole lot of brain space to figuring out everybody else's characters, because you've got plenty to devote to figuring out your own.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think I agree on that. I think that's really good. You know, I see a lot of players that come in and are using like their pre-gen characters, and they're just trying to figure out, okay, what do I roll for? What, you know, what are the different blocks and things? I think one of the things that is useful as a new player, especially if you're using a pre-gen or if you've even made something of your own, is how you can help other players too. You know, help them either with skill checks or maybe help them if you have a buff or debuff and kind of seeing that.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, because otherwise you lose out. You know, so if you have something like coordinated shot and on a pre-gen and you don't really know how that works, you know, it's kind of good to look through. Here's the things I can do. Are any of these things helpful to other players? And can you give me the instance where maybe I might want to do that kind of thing?
Oh, I like that. That's a really good idea. And then how do things that other people do help me? Oh, this this person's given the, you know, the gives debuffs the enemies because they spend a lot of time intimidating them. All right, well, I can take advantage of that, right? Even to the point where you're like, hey, I'm going to attack this guy, but I'm going to wait. Are you going to scare this guy so I've got a better chance of hitting him? Or he's got a worse chance of hitting me and, you know, things like that. I feel like I've seen that a little bit in our Intrepid Heroes game because we had my wife join the campaign from the beginning, but all of us have been playing together in the Dead Sons game. And so initially we had a lot of references to the old game and the old people and the old way of doing things. We do a lot of that, a lot less of that now that we're in book five already of Dawn of Flame.
We've been playing for almost 2 years.
That's right. But we still do it a little bit. And yeah, I feel like at the beginning she was sort of laser focused on, all right, what does my Solarian do? Right. And now she's started to branch out a little bit to feel like she's a little more knowledgeable about what everybody else is going to do and how they're going to go. And, you know, gosh, well, I know the Vesk is going to throw a grenade. That's inevitable. So I ought to keep that in mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's, I mean, it's good. Like you mentioned a Solarian. So you also maybe need to keep track of how many rounds something's been going on, because Solarians often like to be in a position where they don't have to ask you to move so they can use their supernova ability.
Right.
Or, you know, like for our particular group, we kind of gotten a sense for the timing when people like to do stuff. And so somebody forgets to do something. Like, we know that our envoy has the ability that if somebody is successful in attacking an opponent, can give everybody a 5 foot step as a free action. Right. So now, like, if somebody attacks, sometimes they say, oh, is he going to do that? Or he might say, oh, do you guys want me to do that? Versus the very first time we did that, nobody knew what was going on, and he didn't know that he should say that, and I didn't know the timing of it, and you know, so
yeah, moving from being reactive to your party members' abilities to proactive mm-hmm. about them is a really important step in sort of meshing your tactics together. Because when mm-hmm. he would offer, oh, does everybody can take a 5-foot step? I'd be like, oh, gosh, sure. You know, maybe I could put myself in a slightly better position or suggest how other people could. But now that that's sort of an established ability, you're exactly right. We're like, all right, well, I'll get this far, knowing that as soon as somebody gets hurt and I get to take a 5-foot step, I get to be this far, right? I can mm-hmm. think ahead mm-hmm. and count on it.
You know, so I think as a new player coming in, you learning your own character and what it does is important. And then getting to that next step of seeing the interactions between the characters. Because for me, that's what's most satisfying is when we as a team are able to accomplish something because all of us are contributing rather than we have one guy goes in and just takes care of everybody.
Yep, yep. So. Yeah, and I think that that actually, not only does it sort of make for a better feel all around the table, and sort of a better story to think back about how everybody had to pull together to do a thing. But it also helps mesh, you know, with socially. It meshes the group maybe a little better. Mm-hmm. So
now if you have, so say you're an existing group and you have a new player join you, and they could be brand new or they can be somebody who's been playing in the game for a while, but you're running an adventure homebrew or an AP, new player joins you. What shouldn't you do as existing players?
Ooh, what should existing players not do when they have somebody new? I feel like the existing players need to be really careful to not assume any specific knowledge, right? The last thing I'd want to do is, you know, oh, well, you know, yeah, we've got this, you know, I'm a Brenneri and this person's a Han and this other person, you know, is from Dimalco. And everything's plainly going over the other person's head. And you're like, wait, you don't know in detail all of these possible different player races. All right, well, let's take a step back, right? You don't want to be assuming that their knowledge is going to be up to speed with everybody else, because it's just not. Even if they know the game very well, they don't know your game that you've been in very well, right? So
I do think that's important. I also think the opposite can get to be really annoying. And I've actually seen this where we'll have a really experienced player and somebody new comes in and that experienced player basically tries to play the new player's player for them. New player's character. And I just, you know, even if somebody's going to do something suboptimal, even if they're going to make mistakes, whatever, that's their character to do that with. That's how they learn. And for somebody to like nitpick on them, because they're not min-maxing everything and they're not doing the optimal movement and optimal direction and optimal attack based on some criteria that that individual set, I find that to be very annoying.
Yeah, there are, I've heard at least a couple of times, and I've been in one group where an established group has a new person join in, and it turns out there's some alpha player, just like you described, who thinks mm-hmm. everything's got to be done the right way and just ends up being kind of a big jerk to such a degree that the group is like, hey, we want to keep this new player, but we're going to kick this alpha player out. Right? We didn't realize how much of a jerk this guy was. Or maybe some of them had maybe a little sense of how big a jerk the guy was. But this is a good opportunity to sort of, you know, kick this person to the curb. And you realize at that point, if you've got an alpha player among you, you can't then add anybody. There's no situation in which you're going to add anybody that they're not made to feel bad by the alpha mm-hmm. player coming in over the top. And that's really unfortunate.
Yeah. Our local lodge here, when we first started, we didn't have a lot of players for Starfinder. And so basically we had what we had, and I think we had to be very careful. If we had people that got overbearing as we were trying to recruit new people, we had to really rein them in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've done that a couple times, and I think it's been pretty successful. We have a very active lodge now. Now that's online, you know, it's all online. But even when we were in person, you know, pretty regularly we were having, you know, games 2-3, sometimes 4 days a week. And sometimes we were running, you know, on the weekends, especially, we'd be running two tables. Sometimes we'd have three tables of Starfinder going, you know.
Sweet.
Yeah. Now, I'm really curious, you know, this the whole pandemic thing, it looks like everybody's thinking it's winding down, is my impression now.
Yeah, that I think that's dangerous thinking, but
I do too.
But prevalent thinking. I think you're right to say a lot of people are thinking so. In fact, I think that was a very politic way of saying it, right? You're like, everybody thinks it's winding down, right? You're not taking a stand one way or the other. But no, I think we should fairly keep in mind that things absolutely aren't going to be back to everybody's around the gaming table as they used to be, you know, for many months still.
I was just telling my wife that you know, Origins has moved from, when was it, middle of June to now they've moved to September, hoping that's going to be clear. And I'm kind of hoping that I can make Origins this year person, if that's the case. Well, I have a really good friend from high school, and you actually met him. He played, we were doing Dead Sons. He was the redheaded guy that came in and guest played with us.
Okay. Yep. Yeah.
And so he lives in near Columbus. And so I like going to Origins because I get a chance to see him too.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
And everything else. And he's a gamer, you know, he's a lifelong gamer too. But I hope also, I think that's going to be the first one I personally can probably safely go to. Even if PaizoCon happens this year, I don't think I'll be clear to go by May. Just because my 1 year point is middle of June, and basically they're super careful until that point.
There's no reason to risk it. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yes. Yeah, as far as PaizoCon and Gen Con go, I go where I'm instructed because that's work for me. Other than that, some of the other things that happen, you know, OrcaCon, some of the local conventions, if they can open and do so safely, I think that's something that I want to get back into as well. I think that'll be a lot of fun. I still think that it might be. I think that if I had to stage what I was going to be doing, it would probably be in the order of, probably go in the order of local groups where I see kind of the same people all the time and we have a conversation amongst ourselves. Mm-hmm. Hey, is now the time to get back together? Does everybody feel comfortable? When would that time be? And we can sit around a table again. That's what I'm going to kind of move towards first. And then something like a convention, which has a lot of other people circulating. I know that mathematically speaking, I'm not actually keeping my germ circle small as soon as we have six people from different households sitting around a table, because they all expand out of their own germ circles and so on and so on. But it still feels better to me than going to a convention.
No, I agree 100%. I'm just hoping that come September, things are looking a lot better and that the vaccine works for me. I actually get my second shot on Friday.
Oh, congratulations.
So, yeah, because me being high risk, the VA has been able to get me early compared to other folks. It was really weird because I'm going in there for my first shot, and everybody there is over 70 but me.
and they're giving you the look like, what are you in for? It's like you're here in prison, right? You're like, what are you in for? But you don't look like the kind that would be in here.
Yeah. But I was like, as soon as they offer that up, schedule me up. And I keep getting reminders saying, hey, this is available. I said, no, I've already got it. I'm going. So for me, it's like they don't know for immunosuppressant people like me how effective it will be yet, because it wasn't really tested. This is actually part of the testing process.
You're a guinea pig for it.
You know, so they'll do some lab tests and see how effective it actually is. It's not going to harm, but they just don't know how beneficial. The initial results I've heard anecdotally from a couple of people is that it's very effective for them, but that's probably really case by case.
Well, and it's the last thing you want to do is try to test it in a way that involves, all right, now let's expose you.
Yes.
Okay, you're fine.
No, I don't want to do that.
I'm certainly willing to wait. I understand that the emergency personnel are more important. Teachers are more important. The elderly are more important. Immunocompromised people are more important. I'll wait my turn. I'm going to get it, but I'm going to wait my turn.
Well, I need you guys to get it sooner so we can have our get-togethers. So
That's true. Yeah. That's true. I have done a couple of get-togethers with people, sort of the yard parties. It's nice that we've had such a mild winter so far because we've been able to kind of bundle up and do that and be outside.
We could do our actual play in your yard.
We could. I don't know whether or not the microphones would pick up ambient noise. My chickens would probably be just pick that time to be really noisy.
Yeah, that would be it. That would be interesting. Because you remember, all the mic cords are really long. You always have to wind them up.
That's true. That's true.
So everybody bring their own table.
And we'll arrange them. I'll put chalk lines on the ground. Actually, I do put chalk on the ground when I have people over, right? Like, you can come this far. This is your little box, and it's 6 feet from this little box. And it's, So we'll have all the different spacing we could do.
Yeah, I can't, My wife is feeling really, really antsy lately, and God bless her. She's being really cautious for me and not going out and doing things. But she's like, I haven't done my hair in over a year. She hadn't had a haircut. And so because she cuts my hair. So, and I don't know that you need haircuts, do you?
Oh yeah. I have my 12-year-old gives them to me now. That's right.
You mentioned that. Yeah.
I'm not going to stop. Yeah. I'm going to keep making her do it because it works just fine and it's free. And
that's what I was thinking of my wife. My wife actually does a really good job, except, my barber, I think she really counts on me cutting hair, get my hair cut. So I might have to go back to her.
Right. So. You don't want to directly be the cause of somebody's business having to fold that. Yeah.
I could be the straw that breaks the camel's back. That'd be such a tough decision. Yep. But she's pretty anxious, dude. And she says, once you get your second shot and 2 weeks after that, then I'll look at maybe getting my hair cut. I said, okay, well, that's fine.
Well, is she getting a shot as well? Or let me ask more broadly. Is she, because she's in a household with somebody that gets the early shot, does she also then qualify to get an early shot?
Well, that's what some people had told us, but she's gone through the phase thing for Washington, and it says you're not eligible.
Oh. And
so if you're living in a multi-generational household with somebody who's older than you are, they haven't pulled the immunocompromised into that same bucket, apparently.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't. It's kind of weird. So I'm just hoping everybody doesn't slack off so much, and this goes away sooner than later.
Yeah, I think. That's actually been the hope from the very beginning, right? There's been an awful lot of slacking.
I know.
And now with the vaccine, maybe there's a reason to be, even with the vaccine, I think a little amount of slacking will still get us through it. Whereas even a little bit of slacking was not stopping the freight train of it before. So.
I know. When I look at the numbers and say, the numbers are looking better, but this is still three times as worse than it was at the height of the pandemic when we closed everything down. Now we've been desensitized to how bad it is.
Yeah, that is exactly right. I think, when I tell my kids, you only have to do a third of the amount of chores you had to do last weekend, they're like, Dad, it's still a lot, feels like a lot of chores.
Yes. All right. It's great catching up with you here when we do this. I'm glad we had the chance.
Yep. This is always really good. Thanks, John.
All right. Well, I'm John.
And I'm Ron. And this is Digital Divination.